as I was saying a few minutes ago, today's farm look a lot different from farms of the past. You take a walk through a barn, you might see robots milking cows, or maybe you have, as Secretary Romanowski was talking about, you might have moisture sensors or temperature sensors out in the field. Joining us now is Joseph Schockel. Joe's an agricultural engineering technology professor at UW River Falls. Prior to becoming a professor, Joe spent 16 years in the industry. I know he spent some of his professional life in Japan. I'm going to ask him about that a little bit, too. But we'll talk with him as well about UW River Falls Ag Engineering degree program, driverless tractors, and a whole lot more. If you're a farmer, which robots do you have on your farm? Tell us what you think about driverless tractors, perhaps. Join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Joe Schockel, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, man. You know, some people, I think there was probably some assumptions that farming is one of those professions that use technology the least, but farming's always been pretty innovative. What are some of the big technological advances that have happened in recent years?
Well, I think right now agriculture is like in the midst of a revolution, and it's really a lot like 100, 120 years ago when we went from horses, literal horsepower, to engine power. And you know, back then it took a while for those big, some lumbering, like steam-powered machines to go from the niche areas to finding general use. So after a few decades, 10 to 20 years, actual farm tractors were designed that escaped that niche markets, and the general farmer could use them. So I think right now we're at that same kind of a pivot point with robotics. I mean, we see robotics that handle some niche tasks, and you mentioned a little bit ago about milking, pushing feed in a barn, for example. But I think we're on the verge here of having those robots take over more tasks, actually go from assisting an agricultural laborer to replacing that laborer.
It seems almost impossible.
Well, if you look at around the house, we got the Roomba vacuum yeah, cleaner, right? And it does a good job. But, you know, if there's a little dog doo-doo or a certain kind of mess, that robot can do more damage than good. So robots are good at repetitive and sometimes precision tasks, but they're not very good at making decisions. They're not good in a situational context, as they say.
Yeah. Well, so we're not going to get rid of the laborers entirely.
No. It'll take some time for the robots to go from helpers to actually being able to replace that person. In other words, having the ability to make the judgments that a human being does. So right now on a farm, you might see robots that haul, like mule bots. They might haul flower pots. They might haul vegetable trays, fruit trays, from the field back to a trailer or a truck to haul away. You might also see picking robots. Now, greenhouse-type operations have robots that pick strawberries, pick fruit, pick vegetables. And so if we could combine the hauling robot with the picking robot, and that's gradually happening. You got a machine that can not only help the human, but replace that human, you know, as it harvests, you know, fruit or strawberries.
That's an amazing example of technology tackling a kind of a basic problem on the farm. Are there some other ones?
Well, there's many. I mean, there's so many. I mean, I kind of divide it into the high-value type crops, fruits and vegetables, to crops that we have more around here, corn, soybeans, hay, you know, larger commodity crops. So those have been more like a monoculture type agriculture where it's, you know, large fields with the same crop extending on and on. Now, we haven't seen much robot action in those fields, have we?
No.
Not so far, but it's coming. So, for example, we are going to see semi-trucks do so-called platooning. Platooning is where you have one truck with a driver and then a number of trucks playing follow the leader behind that driver without drivers in them.
Ooh.
So we're going to see that with tractors and farm field operations like we have here in the Midwest. The first tractor would have a driver, and then you'd have a number of tractors behind him or her without a driver. So that's kind of a way that robotics is going to start to take over the labor. See, those tractors could have operators in the past. And now with the automation, the sensors, and so forth, collision avoidance, we're able to partially go autonomous so that those tractors are playing follow the leader still. They're not out there on their own yet. That's coming too as well. But this is going to be an intermediate step.
Ross in Gaze Mills sent us an email. He asks if robotic farming is going to lead to bigger farms that are associated with water quality problems.
Well, that's a great point. If we look at the robotic milkers, one robotic milker unit has a price tag around $400,000. And that unit can milk roughly 60 cows per day. You need to make it pay off, though, don't you?
Yeah.
So you'd have to have quite a number of cows to make those robots pay off. And, you know, as he mentions, that drives the size of farming operations bigger. That also brings into play our newest major here at River Falls is environmental engineering. And so, yeah, well, farms are getting bigger, and it's not like the old days when I grew up on a farm, you know, could walk outside. Yeah, hey, let's put up a new pole shed back there. And, you know, you didn't need to do any site studies, didn't need to get any permits. Nothing was big enough to affect water quality, soil quality, and air quality, but now it is. So luckily, agencies like the DNR and like engineers, like we are training here, are getting involved now to keep those larger farm operations safe.
Yeah. Gary in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello. So I'm wondering, if we go ahead to the day when maybe robots basically run the barn and the interaction between livestock and people is minimal or maybe even non-existent, I'm just wondering if that would benefit agriculture. I'm not sure how important it is for, you know, for, say, cows, for example, to get to know the farmer and the farmer to get to know the cows when it comes to the end product of, milk or cheese or whatever else.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gary, that's a great question. And, you know, growing up on a dairy farm myself, you know, we kind of had our favorite cows.
Yeah.
And we had cows, you know, that Casey always seemed kind of ornery and you didn't really get along with. But actually, going to robotics with a robotic milker, it provides so much data to the farmer. And actually, the farmer can get to know that animal in much more detail than when we milked cows by hand. So in addition to extracting milk from the cow, you know, milking the cow, that robotic unit is taking a lot of data from the cow, how much milk she gives, the quality of that milk, how many times she tried to enter to get milked. The robotic milker responds and gives the cow a certain amount of feed that she needs. She'll get the rest of her feed out, you know, at the feed bunks. But really, it makes farmers spend more time in front of a desk looking at their screens, their computer screens, seeing where the cows are, when they were milked, what kind of quality milk that cow gave, and so forth. So they become kind of data analysts in a way.
Yeah, they do indeed. And the actual reading of these, it takes some skill to do that. This is not just a mindless operation you got here.
Oh, no, it's the three working together, the cow, the computer, the robot, and the farmer still has to be involved, but just in a different way.
Well, I kind of smiled to myself when you were talking about particular cows you liked and didn't like, because I had the same situation on the farm when I was growing up. But is the interaction important? That's kind of Gary's question is, what do we lose when livestock and people don't interact anymore?
Yeah, that is a good question. And I often wonder, should we be providing, certain music or sounds of nature to the cows when they're going through these robotic systems to bring some of that human touch or, the emotional touch back to the milking process?
Yeah, it's a good question. Gary, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can also email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Maybe you could say a word about the major in environmental engineering. What's it all about?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. So, we established that program just a couple years ago, and we're training future engineers to design structures. It could be buildings, it could be waterways, retention ponds, or it could be roads, bridges, and the like, all while keeping our soil, our water, and our air clean. So these projects, like the caller mentioned previously, can get quite large nowadays, with a lot of earth being moved and upsetting the natural balance, the drainage ways, and so forth that are there. Mm-hmm. So these engineers learn about water quality, pollution, soil quality, air quality, and how to design and build structures that keep things clean for generations to come.
So, and that's a relatively new major. Are you getting a lot of interest in it?
Yes, we are. We're surprised at the interest, and we're very happy with that because industry needs these graduates. We're in the midst of a generational changeover here. I mean, the baby boomers are retiring, and within the environmental engineering field, there's kind of like a bump, a big group of them now that are set to retire, and we need to replace those folks.
Joe Schockel, our guest today, agricultural engineering technology professor at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, talking with him about technology. There's a lot more that we've got to talk with him about as well. Tractors and automatic autonomous tractors and drones in agriculture and maybe a little more on robotic milking. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@WPR.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Joe Schockel. I'm Larry Mueller. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about robots and technology on the farm with our guest, Joe Schockel. Joe, he's an agricultural engineering technology professor at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. Prior to becoming a professor, he spent 16 years in the industry, spent some time working in Japan, as a matter of fact. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Have you seen farmers using new technology? Maybe you're using it yourself and want to talk about it. What's your vision for the future of farms? You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Lester in Milwaukee called, couldn't stay with us, Joe, but wondering if there are technology advances in the grain industry that are helping farmers yield more crops.
Well, yeah, thanks, Larry. Grain industry kind of falls into the monoculture type agriculture we see up here versus high value vegetable crops you might see out in California. And robotics and autonomous farm machinery is going to take longer to work its way into that kind of agriculture. There are some ways that robotics are assisting, for example, corn farmers. If you look at corn needs nitrogen to grow well. Corn needs nitrogen. If you put that nitrogen on all at once when you plant the corn, a significant amount of that nitrogen evaporates up into the air and it's lost. And so it's better to apply that nitrogen at several times during the growing season, including after the corn is 3, 4, 5 feet tall. How do you do that? And so there's a company developing a robot that it's actually called ROW bot, that gets between the rows of corn and applies that nitrogen fertilizer that way. So, yeah, it can only go through one row at a time, but look at the price and size of the machine compared to, like, full-size tractors now. You know, the economics can pay off that way where you have, say, 10 robots versus one large tractor. And the machine can work 24/7. It's battery-powered. I think they have an IC engine version available as well. And it can apply that nitrogen no matter how tall the corn is. So that's one way robots are working with grain farmers. Another way involves drones. I know we mentioned drones before the break. And drones are out there, and drones are finding certain niches now. One of the niches is measuring plant health. And so they can use certain cameras to actually take pictures of the field as they fly and measure crop health. And they now the drones can actually carry liquid fertilizer as well as herbicides and go out there and spray areas that need additional nutrients right during the growing season. Then none of the crop is run over because you're not bringing tractors and machinery out there. So that's a way drones are starting to help grain farmers, but I'm not seeing too much of that out there yet. You know, Larry, and kind of in a way, it's like when we take care of our lawn, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go out there every spring with, you know, weed and feed and just lay it on, whether or not the lawn needs it or not. We put it on equally heavy in, you know, lower areas, you know, where the grass is growing well versus up on little knobs and hilltops. If we could find a way to apply that nutrient and fertilizer where it's needed and not where it's not needed, those farmers can save money. And so that's starting to be done as well. And it's taking a little longer with the grain farms because they're just so large. They're so much larger than the vegetable farms.
Yeah, there are, I mean, 1,000 acres. A farm might be have 1,000 acres of grain.
Yes, and when the drone can only carry a few gallons of nutrient or herbicide, it's not quite practical yet.
Yeah, they can be expensive. They can be expensive, and maybe complicated to analyze. So the average farmer with a couple hundred acres, I think, is the average farm here in the state of Wisconsin right now. Not as probably as useful to that person as the person with much more land.
Right. Although the couple hundred acre farmer is probably using some level of precision agriculture in their existing machinery. So in other words, use the satellites and now working with cell phone signals to determine where to plant the seeds. And you often can notice those fields that have been precision planted driving down the road, and you see like super, super straight rows.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh boy, how did he do that? I mean, steady at the wheel. Probably then the computer was driving the tractor.
Well, I got to tell you, when I was a young guy in our farming community, that was one thing that everybody kind of looked for, those rows along the roadsides. If you had a straight rows, that was a boasting point.
Right. Right. And now it probably indicates that farmer is using some level of precision technology and guidance, and his hands are not on the wheel. His hands are, or her hands are not on the hydraulic levers to raise and lower, enable and disable that planter.
I understand that agriculture is the number three market for robotics.
Yeah, that's surprising. You know, you think of like painting robots and robots at, you know, facilities like Amazon, grabbing all those packages and putting them onto belts. But agriculture is right up there.
And the broad array, I guess, is what uses on the farm is what makes what brings them up in terms of their use.
Right. So we can look at the types of robots that are used on farms. I think we mentioned the picking robots before break. So robots that are tuned to recognize a fruit or a vegetable that's ready for harvest and then reach out with some sort of grippers and take that fruit off the plant without damaging it, and sometimes even put it in the final package that you would see at the store. Related to those are weeding robots and our Nio Oz that we plan to purchase here this spring could be classified as a weeding robot.
There's a lot of people that would like to have a weeding robot. I think, how does it weed?
Well, their robots can work in one of two ways. They can be totally autonomous, and it's kind of like the Roomba vacuum. You know, it does a social job of being autonomous. It doesn't look like it plans its route very well, but it gets the room covered one way or the other. And the other type of robot is a guidance-based robot. It's a type of robot where you pre-program in the exact path of that robot, and it goes out and dutifully follows that path to the inch. It's very accurately. So plus or minus, they say sub-inch accuracy, so plus or minus a half inch, it goes where it's told to go. And so, like we mentioned with the robotic milkers, going to robotics often means that you become a data collector. So with a guidance-based robot, that field is totally mapped down to the nearest inch. That robot knows where your plants are. It knows where plants are not. And if there is a plant there, that's a weed. So it takes it out. And it can do that 24/7, day or night. It doesn't need the sun shining at all.
So does it work like a rototiller, or how does it work?
Yeah, good question. Our robot has a number of attachments, and we couldn't decide which ones to order, so we got their attachment kit. And there are a number of different attachments in there. And so it's kind of, you know, which attachment, what type of device is suitable for your plant and your soil.
Joe Schockel, our guest today, talking about technology on the farm. You can join in with a question at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Someone was wondering if technology raises prices for consumers.
That's a good question. I would have to say it doesn't, because the competition is on the grower side. The competition is to keep costs down. And so on the farmer's side, he's asking, oh boy, what do I do to produce this milk, to produce these vegetables or fruit at a lower cost?
So it in the long run, it's not going to raise prices for consumers, maybe make the yields and the collection of the products.
It would help that, definitely. And, you know, we'd all, I think, speaking for myself and my family, we'd love to eat more organic food. But, you know, the cost is always seems to be a little bit higher. So with robotics like this, with our Nio Oz, we won't need any herbicides. We can do weeding mechanically. And so we can help to grow organic produce and food where it wasn't done before. So I think there could be some confusion in cost. You know, I would look at other factors for driving up costs, and those higher costs now makes robotics cost-effective for that farmer.
Yeah. Well, we've talked a little bit about autonomous tractors that drive themselves. They're being developed and used. Tell us about how they work.
Yeah, that's a good question as well. So a minute ago, we mentioned the precision farming. So the tractor is able to steer themselves, and the operator, like, she doesn't need to worry about raising and lowering implements. Now, if you take that one step further and put an array of sensors on the tractor or machine to detect objects, to detect people, power poles, and things in its path, that tractor can start making more decisions. And it's kind of like what we see in automobiles, in cars now, with our lane detection, with the collision avoidance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So similar to that, the tractor can, quote-unquote, see in front of them and see behind them. And so they're able to turn on, so to speak, more and more of those features. And as the operator becomes comfortable with letting the computer decide where to go, you'll see more and more tractors be autonomous. In fact, some of them might have the ability now. I was looking this morning at John Deere and Case IH, what they have for offerings, as well as Kubota in Japan. We are seeing tractors being introduced with those sensors on them that can detect objects in front of them. Now, I'd have to come in, before you'd operate those on the road, we'd have to get our laws related to road travel, you know, changed and updated. But I think you'll see autonomous travel in fields sooner rather than later.
And UW-River Falls graduates students are working on driverless tractor development. How are engineers... I guess they're looking to improve on all the different things that you just mentioned.
Right. What comes to mind, we had a student comes to mind right now who graduated recently and is at Case IH. I believe he's at the Engineering Center down in Illinois. There's a lot of testing needs to go on. I mean, would you trust a 20, 30,000-pound machine driving on its own? Could do a lot of damage, couldn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
So a lot of testing needs to go on. A lot of what-if scenarios need to be tested. You know, there's so many variables out in the field, rain, dust, different levels of sunlight and, you know, darkness, and all manner of animals and people and other machines could be out there. So a lot of things need to be tested, and that the computer algorithms need to have those what-if scenarios taken care of.
Joan wonders, how do the robotic milking machines actually work? What happens?
Oh, there's some videos online that you can go and watch. But basically, it's a stall set up where the cows tend to hang around. And when the cow feels ready to be milked, the cow tries to enter. If that cow is in need of milking, the computer lets it in. The computer identifies it, drops down a custom blend of feed nutrients for that cow. And meanwhile, back at the udder, brushes and cleaning utensils are coming up onto the udder to clean it and stimulate it for milk production. And within a few minutes, the milk is starting to let down. The computer throws away the first few, probably like an eighth of a cup, a little bit of milk gets thrown away at first. Then the milkers are attached, and she's milked. The quality and flow of that milk is measured as it happens. The computer is constantly monitoring for the milk to be slowing down and finally stops. As it does, those quarters are taken off. And when the cow is fully milked, a type of treatment is sprayed onto the udder to protect it from microbes and organisms. And then the cow is released to go.
It's quite an operation to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is.
The first time I heard about that, I thought, how are they ever going to be able to put those milkers on the cows? And it working pretty well. You know, there's been a bit of news recently about some farmers complaining about you know, they farmers like to fix and maintain their own equipment.
That's true.
In order to save money, and as this, as the profession, as the tools and everything get increasingly high tech, is that still possible?
Well, yeah, a lot of times now, you've probably heard of the case with John Deere. You need a computer that talks to your tractor before you can even do anything. And so now there's less and less that the owner can do with their machinery. And, you know, for a tinkerer like me, I wouldn't like that. But on the other hand, it could be a case where you could do more harm than good, and you'd want a competent professional in there.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you on that. So that you mentioned Oz before.
The NIO Oz, right. NIO produces a line of robots, and we kind of went with the smallest one because of the scale of our lab farms here at UW River Falls. And we'd like to, you know, introduce the students to robotics, and you don't need the biggest and, you know, biggest and baddest robot to do that. So we're starting with the NIO Oz here. It can seed, it can till, it can go out and do weeding. It could weed flower beds on the campus here. So it's about 32 inches wide, about 40 inches tall, weighs about 350 pounds, and its battery pack will last a good 8-hour day.
Oh, man, that is a good battery pack. And what does something like that cost?
Well, the NIO Oz with the options we got is around $45,000.
Yeah, so it feels like a lot of money, just like, you know, the tractors and so forth that are out there. I mean, they cost a lot of money, but you have to think in terms of the scale that you're working on, I guess.
Well, yeah, that and how much human labor can it replace? And so with the university here, we have a number of test plots where other faculty are trying different varieties of various crops. And doing that kind of a study, you aim for consistency in tillage and weeding and application of nutrients and planting and so forth. Mm. You know, that's one thing robots are very good at is being consistent.
Yeah. You spent, I was going to ask you this earlier, and I've kind of forgot, but I want to bring it back up. You spent quite a bit of time, or some time at least, working in Japan. What was your, what were you doing there?
Well, I love Japan, and I graduated from UW-Madison with my PhD degree and found a postdoctoral position over there. The postdoctoral position ran out after, I think, 2.5 years, and then I found a job doing a similar thing at the same research lab, so I ended up staying almost 6 years over there.
Oh, man. But you finally came back.
We did. And it got to the point where the kids were entering first grade, and you got to ask, well, will we go through the education system here or back in the States?
So you decided back here, and how'd you land at River Falls?
Well, I'd started working out in industry, and a lot of times when you get a good manager, her boss, you follow that manager around. My manager ended up moving from engineering down to marketing. I followed him down there and got to be a lot of travel. A lot of travel. I would put on 100,000 miles on Delta by May. Oh. And like, oh boy, I got to see the family more.
Well, I can understand that. Joe, it's been a lot of fun talking with you today. And technology is what's your vision? You think we're going to have tractors out there running without anybody on them?
I think we have to. If you look at the average age of a farmer in Japan, it's over 67 years old, and people got to eat. So, one way or another, the agricultural work needs to be done.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the more and more autonomous functions built into tractors, kind of similar to what we're seeing with cars, right, with the Teslas and other cars. And so, I mentioned, I think it's sooner rather than later we'll see fully autonomous tractors.
Good talking with you today, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Larry.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Joe Schockel, our guest today, an agricultural engineering technology professor at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. Man, there's lots going on, isn't there, in the technology area? Tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, we get a preview of this year's Leopold Week and learn more about land ethic from an event speaker. And we'll also look through the history of mathematics. I guess it's got a pretty good and interesting history, and we'll find out about it tomorrow on the show. In the meantime, hey, thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.